As an ophthalmologist, Dr. Jacob Lieberman has been able to facilitate what can be considered miraculous cures for people with eye problems. It was the experience of correcting his own vision that opened many doorways into seeing, really seeing, beyond the use of the physical mechanics of the eye, to that place where the five physical senses meet. As this year's president of the International Society for the Study of Energy and Energy Medicine, whose conference is taking place in Westminster, Colorado, this June 24th through the 27th, Jacob has designed a weekend of vision, light, and consciousness. And you're invited. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. Jacob, there's sight and there's vision. How do you discern a difference between the two? And do you think it's important to discern the difference?
Well, the difference between sight and vision is as profound as the difference between night and day. Sight is a... Well, when we say, we don't say, gee, they have good sight. What we say is, wow, they're a person of vision, or they have great vision. One is very, very different from the other. One is a mechanical process of reading an eye chart, reading some letters at 20 feet away, if that's the distance being tested, which relates to just about nothing. And the other is not so much what you see, but what you do with what you see. So vision is not so much what comes in. It's primarily what comes out. It is your response to the visual environment. The visual environment is rather profound because 90% of a human being's input comes in by way of the eyes, the windows of the soul, the body's only transparent biological window specifically designed for light to come in. What does that light do when it enters the seat of the soul? It touches, as Descartes said, the seat of the soul. So there is a high degree of profoundness in this process called vision, which has to do with what it really means to see. So when they say, I see, it means I understand. A person of vision or a visionary is someone who has been graced, perhaps with the ability, as Jonathan Swift said, to see the invisible. So sight is a mechanical process, and vision is the process towards our awakening. And the piece that has to do with our eyes and our brain is the doorway into the journey of our life that allows us to become a person of great vision. And it's a very, very important piece of my life. When you think about the fundamental skills involved in vision, you're talking about, first of all, what happens when light touches the eye. The eye turns as a reflex towards the light. In other words, the eyes by themselves don't look at things. They merely respond to something in nature called light that is calling to them. So this is why we often say, it caught my eye. The question is, what is the it? The it is something no one has ever been able to describe.
Right. Is it in there or out there?
Well, it's nowhere and everywhere. simultaneously.
Yes.
That it, called light, which the Bible refers to as God, which quantum physicists in different language describe its behavior as omnipotent, omniscient, and omnipresent in the same way the biblical explanation is, that essence, if you will, has imprinted in its nature, which is non-material, the intelligence of life. So when light grabs the attention of the eye, it isn't haphazard. It is specifically designed by the same intelligence that animates everything in the universe. It grabs the eye to look in a certain direction because that is the next piece of our life that requires our attention. When the eye turns in response to the light, that process is called presence. Presence occurs when there is that matchup, that eye-to-eye contact between light and the eye. And that presence sets up the foundation for what in life is calling to us. Simultaneously, there's a part of the system. So that was the aiming system. The next thing that occurs simultaneously is the eyes automatically focus. Now, focus shouldn't be thought of making something optically clear. Focusing is what allows us to say, I see, means I understand. So presence and understanding occur simultaneously. The eyes are always continually responding to this input. This is why we say the only constant is change. As everything changes, the eye and everything else is dancing with it in this continual sea of change. And then the final skill is that we have two eyes that simultaneously work together. Each gives you a slightly different view of that which is calling to you. And those two views are very similar, but slightly different. The difference allows the two to be superimposed to give you depth. Now, depth is not just three-dimensional vision. Depth is depth. It allows you to look, to be able to see into things. And that three-dimensional vision is what we experience on a physical, everyday level. As that visual process, as the process of seeing develops and enhances, we can often have a Satori experience, as they speak about in the East, which means kick in the eye. There's a awakening of the inner eye, and we go from three-dimensional seeing to another level of seeing that I don't know how to describe, where perhaps we are not just seeing the outside world, but we are simultaneously seeing and noticing the inside world. So vision, as you see, is profoundly different from sight.
Right. And when you talk about that state that you can, or people can be flipped into, so to speak, it's, I think, moving out of a particular sense, seeing, hearing, feeling, into the place where they're all encompassed together.
Well, you've hit upon something very beautiful. We are blessed with the sense of vision, hearing, smell, touch, and taste. So we see, hear, smell, touch, and taste the world. in response to that, we see something, and something says, I like what I see or I don't. I like what I hear or I don't. I like or dislike what I smell, taste, or touch. So as you see, the senses are directly related to a world of duality. I like it or I don't like it. That's what the senses do. You could say that's sort of like sight. What you're speaking about is where we go beyond the senses that deal with the seen, and there's a development of something which I will not call a sense. I don't have a name for it, but it becomes aware of the unseen. And I believe this is what you're speaking about, where all of them come together into a, if you will, a holographic field that could be termed awareness. The confusion is that people talk about me being aware, me being present. From my experience, when presence is occurring, there is no one being present. There is no one engaged in doing. There is just a being of everything. And the awareness, from my experience, is not my awareness. It's just something is aware. There is an awareness of everything. I should also mention that before we get into the subtler realms of vision, which are, for me, the most profound, I should mention that the process of seeing and vision on a physical level can be profoundly affected through things such as vision training, which is not exercising of the eyes. It's the process of re-experiencing the way seeing and vision is designed to function, that is, without effort. How to actually be in a state of flow where occasionally through the process of grace we are able to have these kinds of magical experiences. So there are many ways of actually working,
I was just going to say, you can't use that word here.
Yeah, that word doesn't use, but there are actual processes that allow us to make these kinds of discoveries. And I say this to you because I went through this process in 1971, and in 2 months, it transformed me from a non-reader who was having great difficulty in school since childhood to becoming a Dean's List student. And then again, I went through this process slightly differently in the end of 75, early 1976, and the process brought me to a place of being able to eliminate my need for eyeglasses, which I had been wearing for nine and a half years, and it's now been 35 years that I have never worn glasses again.
Yes, and that, of course, was the story in your book, Take Off Your Glasses and See. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's really the reason I feel vision is such an important piece is that particular incident, among others, really catapulted me into an incredible search of what is vision? What is it that is seeing? So, it's a beautiful question you ask, and I think it's the journey that everyone in their own way is on.
Yes, and was that a specific incident that happened and then you didn't need your glasses? Of course, everything's a progression or an evolution, but...
Yeah, there were many things. I mean, first I was actually doing some vision training and also simultaneously reducing the prescription in my eyeglasses. And then I had this rather profound meditative experience where I guess you would call it an out-of-body experience today, but this is in the mid-70s. I had never heard of such terms. But literally my eyes were closed, and I could see clearly what was happening with my eyes closed. I couldn't tell where I was seeing from. It felt as though I was seeing almost from every point in the room. And let's just say I had a 300% improvement in eyesight with no change, no measurable change in the optics of my eyes. Still today, 35 years later, almost at the age of 64, I have a very significant amount of astigmatism in each eye and still see 20/20 at distance and near, which is very difficult to explain scientifically, but it is in fact a fact. I've been examined many, many times. So there was an experience that opened the door. Then the process continues. So it's been a continual process that brings me to this moment of noticing that what I originally thought was related to my ability to see what was happening in the world has now culminated in my realization that I'm not actually designed to look for life. The design of things is that life is continually looking for us.
Therefore, the relaxation in the eyes. And
the whole process, I mean, you know, we live in a world where everybody's talking about creating their own reality, making the appropriate choices.
Oh, I have such a problem with that.
You know, getting what you want in the world. And hardly anyone considers the possibility that life is looking for us. I mean, just go into Mother Nature. There is no tree that is trying to create its reality. Life guides its growth, its development, it nourishes it, and so on.
Thank you for saying
that. You
know,
it is the most important discovery that has come, that I have become aware of at this point of my life, that my life is continually being guided each second. You know, when you had asked me to consider doing this interview, I never want to know what is going to be discussed. I love the magic of you asking a question. Where did that question come from before it came into your awareness? So something feeds you a question. That question, even though we don't understand how, is entangled with me on some level and elicits something out or through me that creates this conversation we're having. We don't bother to realize the magic in that process.
It gets very subtle, doesn't it, when we start honoring those aspects of our lives, and then we see where we're not allowing for the place of rest that we can really live from. We see how much energy we're expending so many directions, and the more we're able to see it, the more and more subtle we're about with it. It's a wonderful game, so to speak.
Well, you know, this is how we grow. A tree does not immediately begin as tall. It starts out short, where it is protected by the other trees, cannot see very far. Its view, if you will, is a little obstructed by what is around it. But as it grows, all of a sudden has a much broader view. At the same time, it has to be able to deal with the elements. because the big wind and everything else is going to affect it. In our own lives, the process that we are discussing that allows us to become aware of those places where we have been conditioned to work at life become evident. And as they become evident, awareness becomes curative. And that is what actually launches what we call evolution or transformation. The change that we speak about, that we say, I want, does not occur in response to doing. It actually occurs in response to seeing. When the awareness occurs, the change begins to occur simultaneous with the awareness. When we engage effort into an attempt to make things different than they are, that effort will require effort in order to maintain the small change that we've perceived. And so if effort is required to maintain change, we live in a universe that really occurs with minimal or no effort, the change will not be able to be held or will not stay. But when change occurs as a function of awareness, it occurs effortlessly. And the change is the result of an epiphany.
An aha
moment.
Yes.
And when that occurs, the change is permanent.
So here's a question then. Some days I am walking around momentarily to those aha moments. Every moment I have a smile on my face because it's just moment by moment and it's all good. For you to have that experience you did with your eyes and then you write your book to tell about it, the description of or the telling wants to share the aha moment, but how do you do that without having people expect that for themselves?
The translation of an experience into words
is difficult.
I'm going to use a different word.
Okay.
Impossible.
Okay.
We confuse information with wisdom. We confuse the menu for the food. We believe that words adequately describe. No words can describe that which is essential. So the process of trying to write about it is exceedingly difficult. I am not designed to do that. I have been involved in it because I was inspired to do so. But I'm really not a writer. What's natural for me is to be a word painter, to have this conversation with you and to observe the artistic way in which it flows all by itself. In this moment where there is no effort, where it's just happening from where I do not know, in this moment, words can have medicinal value. They are originating not from Jacob Lieberman. They're originating from something else that's moving through. However, if I should sit down and to try to write out what is coming now free of charge, it's painful, it's difficult. There's a part that tries to make it perfect. And I remember when my son and I were guided to take a bunch of material that had been transcribed from live talks and conversations that I had had in the mid-90s, and it became some of those conversations became the substance of a book called Wisdom from an Empty Mind. And what you pose is a beautiful question, because the whole thing is, how do we take something that occurred by itself and in some way allow that to be the essential message off the written page. And so what we did is literally had a couple thousand pages of transcribed material. And what I shared with my son and some of the other folks that were helping is I said, I don't want to edit any of this. I am merely looking for the little jewels that come through all by themselves with an anonymous author. And that is the content of that book, Wisdom from an Empty Mind. I was attempting to see, is it possible to create that where the person reads it, and if it is appropriate, it moves them into a different place. And I say if it is appropriate because, you know, all humans are part of the same species, just like all trees are, but we're all different. Each of us has a different nature. We are designed for a different purpose in this experience called life. You pose a very, very important question, because so often our writing, whether we are conscious of it or not, is trying to sell something or to convince someone of something. And I know about that because I'm sure that I have engaged in that at a time when I didn't see that. But that was extremely important, because becoming aware of that is what now allows me to experience it this way. Each of those places in our life becomes a launching pad for a whole nother level of awareness.
Speaking of jumping into different levels of awareness, the ICEEM conference, which is the International Society for the Study of Subtle Energy and Energy Medicine, will again be in Westminster, Colorado, this June 24th to the 27th. Tell us what your connection is to that, Jacob, and what will your focus be as the conference this year is relating to light, vision, and consciousness?
I was blessed to be asked to be the president of ICEEM for this year. And as acting president, I have the opportunity to create the focus of the conference. And since light, vision, and consciousness, three words that are probably speaking about the same thing, have been the focus of the last 40 years of my life, I decided to make that the focus of the conference. The conference will be profound. We have a lineup of extraordinary presenters, some of the greatest ones you have never heard of. The focus will be to discuss what is guiding this physical system, what is even preceding what we call mind. So the conference promises to be extraordinary. It is very important to me that those that present, that their life is their message, as Gandhi said.
We'll see Jacob Lieberman June 24th through the 27th at the ICEEM conference. Info at ISSSEEM.org. And for any guest information, to listen to archives and share resources, check out our new blog at tributariesradio.wordpress.com. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.